Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Heart Talk with Miss E. Today is Tuesday, December 6th, 2011. Can you believe it already? And as we are wrapping up the end of this year, I figured that there are probably several things going on with people today. One, there's some stress about the upcoming holidays. And for others, there's the question that we always hear inevitably. It's, this year has gone by so fast, or where did the time go? And usually that comment comes from a place of really not having a sense of groundedness or awareness or consciousness of what you've been able to do with that time and energy. And I am grateful to be able to say that as I even just look back over the guests that we've had on this program this year and realizing that it's now already been over a year since we've been doing this broadcast, that there's been a lot of quality information and just heart sharing here, and I've come in touch with so many wonderful people, and the best part for me is that it's all in alignment with my vision. So even though I can say, you know, where did the time go, I'm excited to look and see where it is going. Tonight our guest is someone that I met probably a couple of years ago. And actually, I don't think I've seen her face-to-face since then, but after I introduce her, I'll tell you what was our initial connection. So our guest tonight, as you may have read, has had much reflection on her life, and not only did she think about it and has she thought about it, nor does she just continue to think about it, she has made choices and decisions which have propelled her towards her fulfillment of her dreams, her manifestation, her destiny. And I am so excited to have with us tonight Ms. Shawn B. Arnold, Esquire. Welcome, Shawn. Hello. Did I mute you out? Hello. After all of that wonderful introduction, it looks like her call got dropped. Okay. Well, I hope she actually heard that part. Anyway, as you may have read, that Shawn is not only a successful attorney, having received her law degree from University of California at Hastings School of Law. She also received a bachelor's degree in psychology. She is a licensed financial advisor, and she is the CEO of Platinum. I don't have the rest of it in front of me. I was expecting her to tell us that. Anyway, I met her at a training in Southern California a couple of years ago. And at the time, it was a speaker's training and looking at how to find your greatness within, of course, so through no other than Mr. Les Brown. And since that time, Shawn has actually become a member of the Les Brown Platinum Speakers Network. I know she also does work with CEO Space. She recently had an outstanding workshop or all day called Business Bootcamp, and she will share a little bit about that. But the most heartwarming thing for me is that where Sean has come from. And as we know, this program is about giving voice to, giving encouragement, giving motivation and inspiration for young people who, for whatever reason, have ended up in the foster care system. Some have been able to return to their families. Others have not maybe had that option, but and have bounced from home to home. Some have been able to go into adoptive placements and have forever families. Others just emancipated out of the program and still, with lots of obstacles, lots of challenges, have been able to achieve their dreams. And that's what we want our listeners to be aware of, especially our young people who find themselves or who have found themselves in the foster care system. We also want the adults, the villagers, who I call them, who are caregiving for our young people, for those in the village, whether you're teachers, whether you are social workers, probation officers, anyone who has contact and has a heart for our young people, that when you hear stories like the guests that we've had on our program, including Sean, who will hopefully be back soon, it gives me, as a member of the village, lots of encouragement and inspiration to know that all is not lost. As a matter of fact, that it's not, you know, when we say it's all is not lost, it's not that all is lost. Really, none of it is lost, because every step, every challenge, every situation brings an opportunity for our destinies to be made manifest. So I think we have Ms. Sean back on the line. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Thank you.
Oh, gosh. I did this big, big introduction, and there was no one there.
I do apologize. I was there, and then all of a sudden I wasn't there.
Oh, gosh. Okay. So, welcome. I've just told people a little bit about what you do and some of your accomplishments and achievements, and I was actually waiting to, you got back on to talk about what first drew us to one another. Do you remember when we first met? Actually, and I've only met you face-to-face once, I believe. But do you remember our meeting a couple of years ago?
It was a couple of years ago, but I don't recall the actual event.
Okay. It was at, I believe, at the Sheraton Gateway. But I always tell people, I say, you know, I have four loves in my life. That is children, music, especially Stevie Wonder, food, and shoes. And you had on some bad shoes. And I just remember walking up to you and saying, I've been watching those. I love those shoes. And we laughed. And then as the conversation went on, you shared that you yourself had been a foster child. And so I said, yeah, there's always something to bring us together. So it's all right to have more than one love. So we really haven't had an opportunity to talk much, but I've heard some of your presentations on the Les Brown Motivational Calls, radio programs, and also on some of the coaching calls for the Platinum Speakers Network. So I am just excited to have you here today. And as I was sharing with our audience and our listeners, is that this is the time of year where people are either totally stressed out over the holidays coming, are totally just shocked and somewhat just unconscious about where the time has gone. So,
right,
starting with that question, where has the time gone? What have been the things that cross your mind as you think about this year?
Well, you know, this happens every single year. And I, this year, have been extremely conscious of all of the time that's been passing. Interestingly, that doesn't mean that it passed any slower. It just meant that I was very busy and very cognizant of what I was doing this year.
Okay. And so I hear that you've been doing some awesome things. I spoke briefly before about your working and your boot camp, that the business boot camp you did, and I messed up the name of your organization. It is Platinum.
Platinum Tower.
Tower. Okay. See, I had that T, but I was going to say talk, and I know that's not it. So tell us a little bit about Platinum Tower and what you've been able to do that with that over the past year and how that vision was birthed.
absolutely. Well, I am an attorney. I've been practicing business law for about 18 years, and the business boot camp is actually a culmination of just 18 years of practicing law, nurturing various clients through issues that they've come across, and I found that in each case where a client ran into trouble, it tended to be because they were missing some foundational information that would have helped them run their business better. And after 18 years of practicing law, I found that I had come across just about every train wreck you can imagine in business. So I started developing a business boot camp to help my clients get up to speed so that they would be able to launch themselves into business and maintain themselves in business and ultimately profit from a successful business. Lo and behold, the banks should have the meltdown back in 2008. And when the banks froze up, all of the transactions froze up because the banks stopped lending money. And as a transaction attorney, that, of course, means that my job froze up as well. So I was actually downsized from my law firm about a year ago. And it was right at about the time that I was ready to start getting my website online and really getting myself up and running and making a smooth transition from pounding that billable hour to running my own enterprise. And suddenly I found myself just spun out in space, that it was necessary for me to just pick up that gauntlet and run with it. So this calendar year, I have been in very, very deep study on internet marketing, including affiliate marketing, search engine optimization, and social media, in an effort to maximize my presence on the internet so that I can maximize the boot camp. The way that it is currently situated on my website, it's a 12-week course. Well, I have since come across an individual who really helped me see that changing that business model into an internet-based business model was really the way to go. So that's what I've been concentrating on for the last few months.
Wow. So that sounds like it's something that, out of being whirled into midair, it brought you back to something that was really dear to your heart.
Yes, absolutely. And it really gave me something to hang on to. You know, when everything froze up, it was just a really scary time. So this gave me something to work on.
Right. And so you've had experience with working with very scary times and sort of being able to look at what's going on and pull pieces together and pave your way forward. And
yes.
What the primary, I think probably the pivotal point in your life was the time when you went into foster care.
Yes.
Right.
That was actually my very first time dealing with the court system.
Okay, yeah, I hadn't even thought about that aspect of it. Wow. So tell our listeners what happened that caused you to go into the foster care system, and how old were you at that time?
Well, I was born into just a regular middle-class family. I was an Air Force brat, born in Japan and raised all over the place. And my sister and I, we have a very small nuclear family, just my parents, my sister, and myself, and I was the baby. And my father graduated from Harvard Law when I was 13, and we all moved to New York City, taking up residence on Roosevelt Island, which is a little tiny island in the middle of the East River. I went to school on the island, junior high school. And at some point, got a bad grade on a book report. And, of course, like any self-respecting teenager, I blamed the meager library on the island. Well, my teacher and my father decided that I was going
internet.
To be able to. I'm sorry?
I said that was before internet.
Oh, it was way before the internet. It was almost before cable television.
No, quite.
It's been a while, yes. And so they decided that I could redo the book report, but in order to do so, I had to get a note from my school stating that I went to school on Roosevelt Island so that I could go into Manhattan and get a library card. And I was extremely ready to do that. I was very excited about the prospects of getting off of the island and going into Manhattan on my own and doing this book report. However, the day that I was supposed to pick up the note, the specialized high schools in New York City turned out their results from the entrance exams, and I had taken several of those entrance exams. So I was just very distracted and excited about all of the various schools that had and had not accepted me. I forgot to get the note.
Uh-oh.
So I went home from school that day, and I was a latchkey child from kindergarten. I never had a babysitter. I had a key around my neck my entire life. I went home that afternoon and let myself into the apartment, and I was doing my chores. And my father called at the normal time of day, and I launched into a long explanation of all the schools that accepted me and all the schools that didn't. And the only thing he was interested in was that note.
Mm.
And when I told him that I didn't have it, I knew before he said it that I was in trouble, basically. He got home about 10 o'clock that night and dragged me out of bed by my curlers. And I'll spare you the gory details, but by the time he was through with me, I had a black eye, a hairline fracture on my left wrist, and a split lip. And
whoa.
So the next day, yeah,
over
let's say that.
About a sheet of paper.
Yeah, for a note. Unfortunately, that was very par for the course. You know, from the outside, we had a perfect family. We were well-educated. We were well-traveled. We were respectful of our peers and our elders. A beautiful family, but there was this terrible crack in the veneer of our lives. This violence permeated the household. Our entire lives, and it ultimately destroyed everything, including the very family unit itself.
Well? Was there also spousal abuse? Was there spousal abuse as well?
Oh yes, absolutely.
Okay.
My parents used to attack each other like animals. It was really very horrific. I grew up in just a very, very chaotic, violent household. And the next morning after all of this, my mother put makeup on me so that I could go to school. And I remember sitting in social studies class, which was the class that started the infamous report in the first place. I was sitting in that class, and I remember two things actually occurring to me. One of them was, if you had to put makeup on me so I could go to school, then you knew it was wrong.
Hello.
And the other thing that occurred to me was either my father or I was not going to physically survive my childhood.
Mm. How old were you
at
this point?
I was growing into a woman. I was 14 years old at this time.
Wow.
And the woman that I was growing into was not able to take another beating. I just couldn't do it.
Mm.
Something had to give. And so I went home from school that day, and I sort of sat in the living room. My school was maybe 100 yards from the apartment building where I lived. And I sat in the living room in silence. I have no idea how the telephone found its way into my hand, but it did. And I called the police. And the desk sergeant answered the phone.
But
I'm going to
stand right here for just a moment, because when you said you don't know, my take is that you were reflecting on one level of all the things that had transpired, and there was a part of you that said, No, we're not even going there anymore. There was a part of you that made a conscious decision. Well, the subconscious made a conscious decision that this is not happening anymore. This has got to stop.
Well,
would you agree?
It was a conscious awareness that I'm very serious. One of us wasn't going to survive my childhood. It was just that clear to me that either way, my life was going to be ruined. I had to leave.
Wow.
I don't know of very many children that cast their families aside and walk out. Unless
something there are many who
is...
would like to. I think there are probably not as many who have the heart and the stamina and the conviction to do so.
Yes.
Not for those purposes. Yes, yes. So the phone ended up in your hand.
So the desk sergeant then answered the phone when I called the police. And I asked him, sir, I need to know what the laws are that constitute child abuse. And he said, hitting a child so as to leave a mark and not clothing that child and not feeding that child. And there's such a thing as emotional abuse as well. I glanced at the purple bruise on my wrist and I said, sir, I think I need to report what might be child abuse. And he said, are you a neighbor? Are you a teacher? I said, no, sir. I'm the child. He said, no. You have to be under age 18. I said, I'm 14. And he said, you're 14? I was a rather cerebral child, so I guess he was surprised. And I didn't have this voice, even at the age of 3. So he asked me a few questions, and I described my injuries and what had occurred the night before. And as I finished describing my injuries to him, I could hear the bell ring in the distance, summoning me back to class. I told him that I couldn't give him my phone number because I had to go back to school. I didn't want to get into trouble. He told me, give me your phone number and don't you move. I complied with his order and I hung up the phone.
Wow.
I sat in the silence for a few moments, just sort of listening to myself breathe in and out. And he called me back in fewer than 2 minutes. And he told me, I want you to go to the Bureau of Child Welfare. They're waiting for you. And I told him, sir, I can't do that. I don't have any money. I can't get off the island. You know, the very sad thing was that my father was a Harvard Law School graduate. We lived in a two-story apartment in the middle of New York City. I never wanted for anything growing up. Bicycles and skates always appeared under the tree on cue, but they kept us broke every single day of our lives. So this police officer told me he wanted me to go to the administrative office at school and borrow the money. And I told him that I would, and I hung up the phone. And I went down to my bedroom, and I found a small beach bag that was about 12 inches square and about maybe 3 or 4 inches deep. And as I packed it with a couple of pairs of underwear and some pants and a couple of shirts, I thought to myself that if I did this thing, if I walked out that door, there would be no going back. I was certain of this.
Knew that.
Nevertheless, I completed my task and walked up the stairs and walked out of my parents' home for the last time. I went to school and I borrowed the money and I got on the little red cable car that many of you have probably seen in the movies. It goes along the 59th Street Bridge and puts you down in Manhattan right next to Bloomingdale's. I then got on a subway for the first time in my life by myself. And I made my way to the Bureau of Child Welfare. And this whole thing just sort of snowballed. They put me in Bellevue Hospital, the children's ward, not the psych ward, just to be clear. Okay. And they called my parents, and they said, "We have your daughter here. She's made charges against you." And my parents said, "Keep her. We don't want her."
Whoa.
And this whole thing continued to snowball. I was placed in a diagnostic center called Geller House on Staten Island. And 3 months later, I found myself sitting in a courtroom, basically suing my parents for divorce. I remember sitting in that courtroom. It was such an odd feeling. I was in the witness chair, and I was looking at my sister, who was sitting near my parents behind the defense table. And my sister was wearing a brand new pair of glasses. And I remembered walking into the courthouse that day. I walked up to my parents, and I said, "Hello." And I said, "Where's Kim?" And she was sitting right next to my mother, literally 2 feet in front of me. I slept in the same bedroom as this girl my entire life. And 3 months after I left home, I didn't recognize my own sister. Those glasses, more than anything else that happened that day, those glasses told me that we had indeed reached the point of no return. Their lives had gone on without me, and it was up to me to take care of me.
Wow. What was it about those glasses? I mean, you tell me what it symbolized for you, but what was at the root of that?
It was the fact that I did not recognize my own sister, that I didn't know she had gotten glasses, that something so monumental had occurred in her life, and it had nothing to do with me.
Wow. That you were just excluded. It wasn't
right.
Even a thought back.
Right.
Now, I am curious, because I've heard you share some of this before, but they hospitalized you. Obviously, there was more than enough evidence that you had been physically abused. No, they did not press charges?
They did, and this was the hearing where ultimately during this hearing they found my parents guilty of neglect, which I thought was very strange because I had a hairline fracture on my wrist, a black eye, and a split lip. I thought to myself, I wasn't neglected. I got personal attention. But, I mean, not to be macabre, but it seemed odd to me that neglect was what they were found guilty of. I was thinking to myself, I wanted to scream, what about assault? What about battery? What about attempted murder? What about mayhem? You know? Neglect. Okay, well, that's New York City.
Probably makes a connection. Did you have legal defense at that time? Did the attorney?
Oh, yes. While I was sitting there in the witness box, I sort of clued in fact, to the fact that my attorneys were just talking to the judge, and they were talking back and forth and back and forth, and none of them were speaking to me. And then I realized that they had made this determination that my parents were guilty of neglect, and they were trying to determine what to do with me. And none of them were even looking at me. And then I heard the word Pleasantville. You see, I knew all about Pleasantville. It was a warehouse for children in upstate New York. That word really frightened me, and out of nowhere this voice rose up in me, this ability to advocate that has served me in good stead to this very day, just rose up in me, and I turned to the judge, and I just started talking. I said, "Please, sir, please, I don't want to go to Pleasantville. I want to stay in New York City. I want to go to a competitive school because I want to go to college one day." And the judge turned and looked at me, and he leaned back in his chair, and I was reminded of De Niro. Are you talking to me? Are you talking to me? I'm the judge. But I think ultimately he was amused by me He said to me, "So you want to go to college one day, do you?" I said, "Yes, sir. Yes, sir, I do." He turned to my attorneys. He said, "What kind of grades does she get?" And my attorneys, my advocates, who were helping the judge decide my future, had absolutely no idea what kind of grades I got. And that is why I'm a court-appointed special advocate, a CASA, for abused and neglected children to this day, because kids' voices get lost in the system.
Exactly. Exactly.
My lawyer went back to the table and he looked at my grades and he sounded surprised. He said, "She gets A's and B's, sir, a couple of C's." Now, as you can imagine, those C's were the source of major contention in the household. I thought on the basis of those two C's that he was going to turn me down flat. But you know, Evelyn, when the judge turned, when he turned to look at me, there was respect in his eyes. And he said to me, "Okay, I'll tell you what. I'm going to give you what you want. You can stay in the city, but you're going to have a disposition hearing in 18 months, and I want to see those grades. You keep your grades up, you hear?" I told him, "Yes, sir, I will. I promise. I'll keep my grades up." So after the determination that my parents were guilty of neglect, the judge placed me in a group home on the Upper West Side of Manhattan on that day. So ultimately on that day, I discovered my voice, and ultimately on that day, I discovered the ability to advocate for myself, and that carrying that into the future, the ability to advocate for other people. And on that day, Evelyn, I stepped into my destiny. Now, what I would like to offer to your listeners is that there's someone on the phone, there's someone listening to this podcast that has a difficult decision to make, the way I made a difficult decision that day sitting in my parents' living room. I urge you to make that difficult decision. You know, it's been said that a difficult decision is a difficult decision not because you don't know what to do. Rather, a difficult decision is a difficult decision because you do know what to do and you lack the courage of conviction to do what you know you must do. Maya Angelou says that courage is the most important of all the virtues, because without courage, none of the other virtues matter. Who is depending on you to make that decision? Is it a child? Is it a spouse? Or is it yourself? I invite you, I encourage you, I urge you to do what you know must be done.
Definitely, definitely. And sometimes that courage comes from a series of events. Sometimes it's that still small voice. Sometimes it's that raging voice that's just saying, "Do it now, do it now, do it now." And I believe it's so important to be able to, you know, my thing is to listen to and follow your heart, because, you know, I shudder to think what might have happened had you not followed your heart on that day. Would you even be here for us to be, even have this conversation? And I believe that deep down inside, there was something that was already in you that already knew. And especially having a sibling, what was the age difference between you and your sibling?
2 years, 2 months, and 8 days, but who's counting? But no one's really sure.
And were you the eldest?
No, I'm the baby.
That's
the baby of the family, yes.
Okay.
Oddly enough, though, as we were growing up, people always thought I was the older sister. So there may have been something, like you said, in me from the beginning. I've always felt like I had a steel core.
Mm-hmm. I believe that. And I often think of Khalil Gibran's statement that said our children come through us, not from us. And I believe that
yes.
you came through your parents and not from them, because they birthed you to place you here on this earth, even though they did not recognize even what they had.
That's correct. And, you know, I really do make the effort to talk about the fact that there were some really beautiful aspects to the family in terms of our education, in terms of our travel and our awareness, and just the way that we deal with the outside world. Because, you know, to a large extent, I believe that I would not be a practicing attorney if I had not gone through what I had gone through. I wouldn't have had the need to be. If I had grown up on a pink cloud.
Right.
The
Your
fact
voice
that
is
I was sort
in
of
and out.
Cast adrift at a young age forced me to get my legs up underneath me really, really fast.
So you made this decision. Now you're tossed. You have enough stamina to get through that. Now you're in this place that you didn't expect to be. Now here's time to either reflect backwards or focus forward. Where were you in your mind and in your heart at this point once you were placed there?
Once I was in placement, I lived for the future. I really did. I sort of recognized as I went from place to place to place that none of these situations were permanent. And so that even if I got into a situation where there was someone there that I didn't like or didn't get along with, I knew it wasn't forever. So I was able, I could put up with anything for a short amount of time. And I just sort of made up my mind that I wasn't going to let the situation get the better of me. You know, I watched the kids around me while I was in placement. And for each of those lives that went wrong, there was a moment when the light went out in their eyes. There was a moment in each of those lives when they decided they weren't worth the trouble, when they decided to internalize all of the ugly things that had ever been said to them.
Yeah.
And so it is so necessary that we keep an eye on our young people, because it really is visible. And it really is something as simple as reaching out and catching that hand.
And
giving them structure, letting them know they are loved and they are not a waste of skin.
Or air.
Simple things. Simple things can literally save a life.
And you commented, you said that you've made up in your mind that none of this is permanent. I can deal with almost anything for a short period of time. Do you believe that the physical abuse that you and the verbal and emotional abuse that you experienced in your biological family gave you that sense of it can't get any worse? And that, so I can deal with this because it's already been worse?
Well, when I went into placement, I know everybody kind of rails against the foster care system, but I'll be honest with you, I was safe for the first time in my life. I was physically safe. Being in placement was the best thing that ever happened to me at that point in my life.
That's when it works. That's the reason it was created. But unfortunately, it's become different from that for so many people. So it's awesome to hear that it actually served its purpose.
Yes, it did. It truly did. It truly did.
Wow. Did you ever worry or wonder about your sister?
My sister sort of reached her zenith with my father maybe a year after I left home, where she just went off on him one day. He started hitting her, and she just backed him all the way up into the corner, and he never, ever hit her again. So they sort of had their moment where she just like I did, decided, you know what, that's the last time. Mm-hmm. That is, now the difference is she and my mom were always two peas in a pod.
Okay.
Very, very close. To this very day, they're still very, very close. So she had my mother.
Okay.
And the
so
two of
had
them
an ally.
Together. Yes,
mm-hmm.
But I didn't have my mother. She was never my ally.
Okay. And I'm tempted to want to go into that, but I want to stay on the course of what our topic is tonight about the reflecting and making goals. So I'm sure as you were there and you decided, okay, I've got to move forward. You know, I can't let my light go out. I'm looking and seeing what's going on with other people, and no, that is not going to happen to me. What were the choices that you made to achieve your goals? I know one was the fact that you knew you had to keep your grades up because you wanted to let them people know that, them people, those people know, let them know that you were not just, you know, some little kid that didn't know anything and was mouthing off, that you were here on purpose. So I'm sure, you know, academics was one of your goals. But what were some of the choices that you had to make on a day-to-day basis just to stay focused on those goals? Because I know that there
well,
had to
I'll
be
tell you, it I really did have to focus on setting goals, short-term goals, and also long-term goals. You know, as I was getting myself through each semester in school, I had to maintain the focus that what my long-term goal was, getting into college.
Mm-hmm.
And the same was true once I finally got out of junior high school and then high school and got into college. It was very difficult for me because I didn't have a net. I didn't have, you know, family to fall back on. So I really cleaved unto my friends and the people that became very important to me. A lot of them are still very important to me for that reason. So friends became important, especially those that had a positive mindset and those that would expect only the best of me. They wouldn't accept me ditching school and failing classes. People expected me to do my best. And so those were the types of people that I surrounded myself with. I also, you know, I've been a risk taker. I guess the fact that I left home at 14 sort of illustrates that I had this natural ability to take risks. So I think that it is important to be a risk taker, calculated risks, but go ahead and take it. You know, leap out there. And Les Brown often says, leap and grow your wings on the way down. And I think that is sage advice. I really do think it's sage advice. Yeah. I find that it's also important to maintain flexibility along the way so that, yes, you do have your goals that you set, but there may come a time when you may have to take a right turn. You may have to take a left turn. And you may even have to turn around and go back the other direction. Because, you know, it's funny, if we live long enough, we find that the experiences that we have in life kind of string themselves together like a string of pearls. And if we keep on going, eventually we will find ourselves coming back to center and the string of pearls will be complete.
And I think one of the most crucial elements of that, and you already stated it, one of the questions I was going to ask you, you know, about what was one of the greatest challenges, and you stated not having that net, that family net, that safety net. And the thing about pearls, they can be pearls and people not value them. There's no one there to admire them, to cherish them. I know there's a scripture in the Bible that says, cast not your pearls before swine. And so one of the key factors is finding people who appreciate, who recognize the value in who you are. And it sounds like you were able to do that.
Yes. You know, because I was in the situation that I was in, I sort of clung to school in those years. I moved from home to home to home to home, but I maintained going to the same school. And a lot of the students that I was in school with didn't know what was going on in my life. They didn't know that I was a foster kid. They just thought that I was just any old kid just like them. So, yes, I clung to school in those years. It was a constant for me. It was the one thing that I knew if that I could bring home the grades and surprise all the powers that be, and they would do things for me. They would pay for dance classes. They would let me join theater groups instead of getting a job in the summer, that kind of thing. So I learned fairly early on that if I brought home the grades, I could get special privileges for it.
Wow. So that was your exchange. What is the other word we use for money?
Bartering.
What did you say? Credit?
Bartering.
What did you say? I missed
bartering.
That.
Bartering.
Laundering?
Bartering.
Bartering. Okay. Yeah, that's a good one. But you were bartering. You were exchanging the value of what you had and what you were capable of, and that was academic success, for some of the other things. And actually, you mentioned dance, and this is a side note. I just remember one of the times you were sharing your story, and you were talking about someone donating the tickets for you to go to this dance. I don't know why, that just warmed my heart. It brought tears to my eyes. Will you share that story about...
Absolutely. Very shortly after I was put into placement, the group home took us to the Met to see the Alvin Ailey Dance Theater perform. And this was on a Sunday afternoon, a matinee. And I sat in the center of the theater, 10, maybe 12 rows back, dead center. And the lights went down, and then the lights came back up. And I watched this performance, and I have to tell you, Evelyn, it was the most beautiful thing I had ever seen in my life. The music and the costumes, the colors, and the freedom and the movement, it was amazing. It went right through me. It went all around me and completely enveloped me, and it absolutely infused in me a love for the dance that absolutely exists to this very day. I think it was the following week that I took my first dance class. And for the next 15 years, I danced like my life depended on it. Everyone knew Christmas, birthdays, whatever, get her some leg warmers, get her a leotard, something she can dance in. She'll be happy. I was an easy target.
Wow. I love it. And that goes along with, for me, in trying to get people in the village to contribute. And everyone, you know, says, well, I don't have a lot of money, or someone says, you know, well, I don't know what to say, I don't want to do it. We're looking for mentors, we're looking for CASA workers, we're looking for people to introduce the world to our young people. And I think that story just touched me so much, because I believe that sometimes just what's the norm or the average for someone, you don't think someone would really, we take it for granted, we don't think someone would very much enjoy it. And when you say that, I laugh, because I did not even see the Nutcracker until I was, you know, over 40 years old, and I was mesmerized. It was like, I've been missing this all my life.
Yes, it's amazing. I've seen American Ballet Theater, the Bolshoi. I can't even go into all the different companies I've seen. Every single Christmas, I make it a point to see the Nutcracker, and I like to see different companies do it.
Right. And it reminds me of an interview that I had with former foster youth Regina Louise, who's also an author and speaker. And we talked about the theme, it's a whole new world. And we want to bring a whole new world to our young people. So fortunately, you had the, after enduring the pain and being freed of that, you had a new world open to you. And so I want to go back to ask about what, besides not having the family, because a lot of our young people go through things, but they still have a lack of focus. And I just going through my notes of what you've talked about in terms of being able to maintain and to reach your goals. One is to have short-term goals, to have long-term goals. Remember, nothing is permanent. To be willing to take calculated risk, to be flexible, and to and I wrote down the stable school because that's something I've been really pressing for, is to have a school where no matter where the child was, they could attend, because I know how important that is for stability. But when you talk about taking risks, unfortunately for a lot of our young people, they take risks, but they're not calculated or they're not healthy risks. Can you speak on that for a moment, please? Because I know that there's excitement and adventure in taking risks, but unfortunately a lot of us as caregivers and people in the village don't understand why someone has to do it like that. What would you say to our young people who are listening, or even adults? You know, because some people are still taking risks, but not the ones that lead them to their goals.
Right. You know, the thing that I really try to get across to my CASA kids is that when I say taking risks, I'm talking about making a determination about how the choice that you are about to make is going to reverberate in your own life. So you don't want to just run off the edge of a building and wind up 22 stories up and crashing into the street below. Rather, you want to look at the pros and look at the cons and really make the proper choices. See, choice is an extremely important commodity in everyone's life, but it is particularly important in the life of a foster kid. Everything you do is a choice, including getting out of bed in the morning, who you call your friend, and whether you're going to do your homework. Are you going to hang with that group of kids that you know are up to no good? Or are you going to hang with the kids that hang out at the library and are basically doing the right thing? If you know that you are someone that is easily distracted and easily led, then you need to make extra certain that you're surrounding yourself with the right kind of people who are going to help you make the right choices. It all comes down to choices.
Yes. Are there a time when you did not make a good choice and you paid for it and you had to get back on track and you were grateful that you got through it?
Well, yes, but not in an academic sense, because I just kept my head down and my elbows up, and I was very regimented as a young person because I didn't have a net, because I didn't have the family. I was afraid to drop the ball because now you have to pick it up again. So I didn't have troubles where I ran afoul of the law, or I got myself kicked out of school and then I had to get back in again. But as a young woman, I was very fearful. I was very emotionally curled in on myself. And it took a lot of years to unfurl myself. It took a lot of years. Frankly, you know, trust, I think, was probably my biggest issue. And not necessarily trusting men or trusting, you know, people in general, but trusting God. I did not trust God. I believed in God, but I didn't believe that God believed in me. It wasn't until I was probably in my mid-30s when I realized for the first time, you know, Sean, the bottom never fell out. I spent all of my 20s and all of my 30s expecting disaster to strike, and it never did.
Wow.
So that was my biggest lesson, was learning to trust. It cost me a family of my own. I have no children. I've never been married. And I'm 48 years old.
Mm.
So it did have very real effects on me as an adult. I did not want anything to do with being married. I did not want anything to do with being a mother until I would say in my 40s, and then good luck trying to find a marriage-minded man in your 40s. I mean, good luck with that. I kind of had to turn my attention elsewhere and concentrate on other goals and other desires, because I feel like I kind of missed that boat.
Trust God. I still say, trust God. Because I think when we become focused on the things that we know that are calling, and I believe, I'm not sure who I heard that said, you say, you take care of God's business, he'll take care of yours. And I believe, you know, accepting your calling and being very, you know, just fruitful and just moving on it, I believe in the process, that's when other things happen, and our society tends to put a limit on it, age-wise and et cetera. But I think other people tend to do it backwards, and I have my life is sort of similar to yours in the fact that, you know, being at an age but having really knowing that I'm doing what I was called to do. But most people do all of the family, the marriage, and everything, and then they wait until they get to be about our age to decide to go to school and recognize their calling. So
right.
I think it's just
we did it the other way around.
Right. It's just a different perspective. And according to society, it would be, not fitting in. But I think that inner strength that you have in knowing that you are on purpose allows us to bring back that other aspect of it. And our young people need to realize that regardless of what you do, I love what you say, the bottom never fell out. It might have felt like it was going to. And when you have something to compare it to, you know what you don't want in your life. So you've been successful at avoiding that, but in the process, creating the things that you do want. And I believe that, you know, with God, all things are possible. When we talk about the short-term goals, and you did yours, you know, mostly on academic, short-term, you know, was the semester, long-term was the college. And then going beyond that, I think some of our young people may not have necessarily academic strengths, but they still have goals. And I think the information that you've shared with us apply to all. So I would like to actually take that and switch it back, because believe it or not, we're three minutes before our hour ending, even though we do have some additional time. But I would like to ask you, if the same principles that you've talked about that got you through your adolescence and childhood through the foster care system, have they been the same principles that have allowed you to make the accomplishments that you've made in this past year with your business and all?
Oh, yes. Being an Air Force brat, I was raised in a very strict household, and so discipline is probably the easiest thing for me to draw on.
Mm.
Yes, I absolutely had to maintain my focus in the last year. I literally made a long to-do list of all the things that I needed to do in order to properly launch my business. And then I took all of those to-dos and I loaded them in a calendar so that I would have three or maybe four things each day to do. And what that means is every single day I wake up, I know exactly what I have to do that day in order to stay on task. And that is something that I really recommend that people try when they have something that has a lot of moving parts, or it seems like it's really big, or it's really overwhelming. Break it down into bite-sized pieces, and then break those bite-sized pieces down into to-do lists, and then put your to-do lists into a calendar, and execute it on a daily basis. That will keep you on task. That will keep you moving forward.
Awesome. And for someone who really doesn't even know where to start, what would you suggest that they do? If they just say, I don't even know where to start. All I know is I want to do something like this, and I have no idea how to even start.
Well, start from the macro and then start chunking it down into its natural component parts. And then take those natural component parts and start chunking those down into smaller, you know, natural places where you would come to a natural end. And then once you're chunking down further and further and further, eventually you'll get it down to task items. And it is those task items that you put into a calendar.
Mm-hmm. And people will probably have some difficulty if they've not done this before on their own. Where would you suggest that they go to even just get a handle, get, you know, some consciousness of this?
Well, there are certain programs on the internet where you can do mind mapping.
Mm.
And that really helps you think of all of the possibilities. And it helps you really think outside of the box, because you don't get caught up in the, oh, I can't make that happen, and oh, that's not possible. You just put all of the possibilities down, and then you start honing them towards what is possible and what can be done. And I would think, if there is either a subject matter that's really difficult to break down or to understand, then start thinking in terms of getting yourself a mastermind group.
Exactly.
And these are people who have different skill sets than you. For example, if you are a secretary and you're looking to start your own business and you don't know anything about accounting principles, then you want to bring somebody who does know about accounting principles into your mastermind group. And if you're saying to yourself at this moment, I don't know anybody who knows anything about accounting principles, then you want to get in touch with your Chamber of Commerce in your city and start going to mixers. Start meeting people that have those accounting principles under their belt. Start meeting people that have legal principles under their belt. Believe me, they're out there looking for you. Every lawyer, every CPA, everybody who is out there trying to make money in the marketplace will be willing to meet and talk with you, because they don't know where their next big client is going to come from, and they don't know where the next big deal is going to come from. So people tend to be very flexible. And if they are at all giving in their energy, you can pick their brain, if nothing else. You can sit down and have an intelligent conversation with them and have them give you some pointers so that you can begin to understand some of these difficult concepts.
Exactly. And I think probably that's the biggest one, just opening your mouth, ask questions, put your intentions out there, because I think we hold on to so many thoughts. And, of course, our negative mindset is going to come and say, you can't do that, or, you know, that doesn't make any sense, or nobody's going to go. But when you start talking, and just even talking and putting it out and someone repeating it back to you, lifts your spirits. And it's like, well, maybe I can. And then you keep going until it's like, I can. And then you realize, I'm doing it. And then you realize, I have done it. And what's next? And that is the process. And we have to be able to share with one another, someone who knows. We don't want to spend our time with people who want to talk about everything except for where we're going. And
that's
a daily choice right there. Who am I going to spend my time talking to? What am I going to spend my time looking at? What am I going to spend my time listening to? You know, what am I going to spend my time doing? And then, but the other part of that is having balance, because one of the things I was going to ask you, you know, you talked about academics and all of that, but it sounds like you dance. But it's also important that our young people as well as adults need to realize that being disciplined doesn't mean not having any fun.
Absolutely.
We have to have some balance and have to have something that's going to, you know, bring some immediate gratification. Or we can plan our gratification as a reward when we get things done, things that just bring you that sense of fulfillment and excitement that you don't have to stay, you know, what you say with your elbows up. What was your statement? Elbows up and head down.
Head down and elbows out. Yes, indeed.
I got a picture of that as you said that. But sometimes we can let the elbows out, let the arms up in the air and wave them like you, and I don't say it like you don't care, wave them like you really do care.
Yes, indeed. It is extremely important to maintain balance and to find something, especially for kids that are in foster care. It's extremely important to find something that you're passionate about, something that you're good at, and really just revel in it and enjoy it and get as good as you can at it. Truly learn to enjoy life.
Yes. And it comes out. And if you're pursuing your dreams and goals, hopefully those goals are something, when you think about that, you get excited, and it helps you to get through those down times. I just saw one of my young people had posted something on Facebook praying, Lord, please let me get through the statistics exam. She's a senior in college. And I laughed because statistics, even in graduate school, I was just thinking, why do I have to take this class? I don't want this. All I want to do is go and counsel people. This has nothing to do with it. And when my instructor sent me my grade in the mail, she said, I can hear you screaming all the way over here now, because I hated that. All I think about was, this is going to get that paper in my hand so I can go and get my license and do that. You know, I had to endure that for my long-term goal. And at the same time, there would be some pleasure. So when you're thinking about your long-term goal, that in itself should put you in that position and raise your emotional energy and your excitement. But at the same time, doing something that brings it right there, that's at hand. And that is so, so important, because I think we tend to not have balance in our lives. And, you know, we either have no discipline or we're totally disciplined. And it's about being whole. It is about being whole.
Right.
So what is coming up next for your for next year? You've accomplished, actually, I saw something, a young lady who actually has been on our program, her name is Ray Luskin, and she has the book called Art from the Heart. And she sent out a 2012 report card, and I thought it was just so awesome, helping us to reflect on the things that we've done throughout the course of the year, what that felt like, what did we use. And then the other questions, you know, well, what were the things that kept us from doing some of the things that we didn't do, and how will we move forward? And I think that is just so neat to be able to look at that. And I was excited just even asking the questions, because sometimes time is going by so fast we do not even stop to celebrate the achievements that we have made.
Right.
You stop looking and say, oh, no wonder I'm so tired. I did do all of this. And there's a place of gratitude.
Yes, indeed.
Yes. So you got your business off the ground this year, Platinum Tower. And what are some of your goals for the upcoming year?
Well, January 1st, I'm going to launch the internet business, which is Platinum Tower. So it's the retooled business. And then going into 2012, I am concentrating on getting speaking engagements.
Okay.
So this is a new direction for me, from pounding that billable hour for a law firm where the only people that really benefit is the law firm and the one client. I am now taking all of these 18 years of practicing business law, and I'm applying those to ebooks and CDs and video products, and I'm making all of that information available to the masses. And that, excuse me, I'm extremely excited about that.
Awesome. So how would someone contact you for speaking engagements? What is your targeted population, and where can people find out all of your other products and services?
Well, you can visit my website, which is businessbootcamponline.com, or you can send me an email to Shaun, S-H-A-U-N-E, at businessbootcamp, www.shawnaonline.com, or you can hit me up on Facebook. My name is Shawn, S-H-A-U-N-E, Arnold, A-R-N-O-L-D.
Shawn Arnold on Facebook. So I'm putting this in the chat room. Would you happen to be, are you in the chat room?
I am not.
Okay. So I was going to make sure you double. So I have www.businessbootcamponline.com, Shawn
correct.
At businessbootcamponline.com, and then
correct.
There's just Shawn Arnold on Facebook.
That's correct.
Okay, and from there they can email you there?
Yes, absolutely. They can send me a note on
it is
Facebook
right. Sean.
Or send me an email. And if anyone is interested in business coaching or business strategizing, especially if they're dealing with large projects that are feeling overwhelming, that's my expertise. Breaking those things down, helping you chunk those things down, helping you craft a strategic plan that's going to get you where you want to go.
Awesome. And in closing, would you maybe give our listeners something, an exercise, a task that they could do in reflecting, and then with that reflecting, another task that they can do on focusing forward?
On reflecting, I'd like to put that on a personal note in that I would like us to reflect on our relationships this year. And especially those relationships with young people. You know, young people are not as resilient as we believe that they are. And a slap, a hit, lasts much longer than the sound. It reverberates through generations. I encourage us to take stock of our relationships and to see what we can do, not to change other people, but to change ourselves, so that going into 2012, we can put our relationships on the proper footing. And going forward into 2012, on a business front, I invite us to really sit down and do some goal setting. Really imagine where you want to be 5 years from now. And understand that the choices that you make today are going to determine where you're going to be 5 years from now. Just like the choices that you made 5 years ago determined where you are right now. Are you satisfied where you are right now? Are you happy? Are you feeling frustrated? Are you feeling as though you're losing ground? Well, then dig in and get your focus. And if you need an accountability partner, please hit me up on Facebook or send me an email. I would love to work with you.
Awesome, awesome. You know, I just have this thought, and we can discuss it a little bit down the line. You know, we're talking about mastermind groups, and I have some young people that are very motivated but sometimes get stuck because they still have family issues. Even after they're out of the system, they have biological family that sort of pull them back, and they don't have peers. And because I know so many, but they're spread out all around the place, I'm thinking about perhaps maybe doing a mastermind group via phone conference or webinar or something. That would be awesome, and I would love for you to actually, if you have time in your schedule, to be a part of that. That dot just crossed as you were saying.
That would be lovely.
Right, right. So we're going to end. I see one comment in. Everybody in the guest room were listed as guests and not their names, so I think guests can't actually post. And we have one guest here who says, today there are more resources to expanding our world with technology and YouTube, et cetera, that was not available in the past. What are the advantages or disadvantages of the past or present in taking risk and making choices?
Well, I think that we stand on the precipice of unimaginable greatness going forward. You know, my grandfather told me that he moved from Kansas City, Kansas, to Texas in a covered wagon when he was 5 years old. And I said to him, "Granddad, how much do you feel about the space shuttle?" And he was a simple man of few words. His eyes kind of glazed over, and he just said, "Wow, it's really something." And, you know, I was almost envious of him, having occupied that space in history.
Mm-hmm.
And then just a few years later, I graduated from college, and on the desk of the very first job I had was this little-known contraption called a personal computer.
Mm.
And after that, we went to cell phones and then the Internet. And the Internet is now turning on itself and becoming this entity of itself. I am so excited to find out where we're going next. We have taken to the sky, and now we're taking to the digital airwaves, and there's just no telling where we're going to go from here. So I think that the possibilities are endless, and I think that rather than being intimidated by all that's going on, we would all do ourselves in good stead to dive right in.
Yes, yes, yes. And I think before we've already talked about, you know, the risk and making sure that the risk is a calculated risk and not just a haphazard risk and weighing the possible outcomes.
That's
and
right.
And I think that. Right, state is a safeguard for that. So thank you for that comment and question, Ms. Foy. So with that, I think we're going to end. I am reminded to make an announcement. I was hoping he would be on the call. We have Chris, who's the editor and creator of Foster Focus magazine, of which I was a featured guest this month. This is December, but it was for National Adoption Month, which was in November. And they did a nice article and write-up about my two books, It's Heart Working
wow.
in the Village of the Child and How's Your Heart Working in the Village. And you can go to the website, which is www.fosterfocusmag.com, FosterFocusMag.com. And if you put /guest speaker, .html, you can see a preview of the article that they did on me. So I want to say thank you to Chris, and we're looking forward to him being on our call at some point. And I'm not even going to try, but there's no failure, only if you don't try. I'm going to try to pronounce his last name, Chris Kmielewski. You can tell me when we speak if I said that right. But take a look at that, and you can also find, I believe you can find Foster Magazine, Foster Focus Magazine on Facebook as well. So, Sean, thank you so very much for sharing your story and sharing your achievements and just giving us, again, a different perspective on a child's heart and just moving a child towards success and finding and recognizing that greatness within. And so I'm excited for all the things that are going on for you at this point, and I'm looking forward to us sharing.
Thank you so much, Evelyn. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak with folks today.
You're more than welcome. So next year at this time, we're going to say, where did the time go? Let me show you. Take care, everyone. Have a good week. And we have one more program this year. Can we believe that? So we will be speaking again on Tuesday, December 20th, which is the Tuesday before Christmas. And you can find through our email, if you're not on our mailing list, you can go to www.forachildsheart.org and click join our mailing list. And you can also join us on Facebook at For a Child's Heart, Inc. And stay tuned to find out what our next episode is going to be about. It's really going to focus on the holidays. We're still dealing with who the guests are actually going to be. We have a few to choose from and see if we can coordinate schedules. So enjoy the rest of your week, the rest of the month, the rest of the year. Be at peace and be focused on what your goal, what your purpose is in life, and do something special for a child's heart. Take care and God bless.
River flows.